SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Good Tuesday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at the website, stevebick.com. Tuesday, still digesting the action from Hi-Ho, Pimlico, and a little bit more. Also absorbing the very cheery and safe and successful and highly welcome addition to the family. A little bit late last night, and we were shooting for the new arrival to show up on Saturday or Sunday. That's all right. Came, I guess, about 36 hours too late to be there live, but we'll be there as early as this afternoon or tonight or next day or so. The third grandchild, and for somebody that didn't have their own children, I'm piling up the grandchildren. Congratulations to Zachary and Andrea and siblings. Lennon and Callum, they have a baby sister, Marley Claire, added to the stable. And Andrea does not like it, did not care for my reference the other day of her getting ready to drop a foal. That did not go over well. It clearly you have to be involved in the game to appreciate that reference. I think she told when Tina sent her the link, Steve talked about the new arrival coming, and it was pretty funny, and she said ha ha. She didn't take kindly, so. But everything went really well, and she came in under the wire. So what's the birth date? 5/5/22, right? Yeah, 5/22/23. I guess 5/23/23 would have been a pretty cool. What's the difference, right? 7 pounds 3 ounces. Is that right? Is that a good? That's a good size. That's a very good size for a brisket. If you're looking to smoke a brisket, yeah. 7 pounder. That's a nice number. We were up because we didn't know if the kids wanted us to drive immediately. So far, it's been a mixed. The first two have been a mixed scenario. The first one, we literally. We're there minutes after they took those adorable hoof prints that they take, where the footprint thing. And I can't remember about Callum. I think I was traveling when Callum was born. So anyway, we tried to hustle there on Saturday for it, and didn't happen. And then literally 24 hours later, the happy event started to commence. So very excited. Marley Claire. And I'll put the pictures up. I've got the early pictures, and we'll put those up in a little bit. Quite a few things, and today will be a big variety of activity, and some of which still kind of floating. If you haven't seen this morning's TDN, I mean, the first TDN conversation we're going to have will be in about 10 minutes or so, or give or take, with Jessica Martini. It's always time for a martini when it's Jessica Martini. And she'll talk about yesterday's action that was a little slow to get going at Timonium yesterday. But things did pick up, and especially late in the session, where the session leader, excuse me, the Mendelssohn filly, bought by Peter Fleur at Speedway, consigned by Paul Sharp, the Mendelssohn filly, $800,000 to lead day one's purchases. That awesome slew, and I haven't discussed this at all with Mrs. Weber, but has come up with conversations with Sid, and I'm sure we'll discuss it tomorrow. Jessica will do the day one recap, and then we'll do more with Sid tomorrow when the whole sale's done. But Awesome Slew is getting some really nice babies, and the colt, the leading colt yesterday, $700,000 to the Windstar-led Maverick Racing agglomeration that includes Sienna and Commonwealth. And, of course, Commonwealth, with a pretty heady few weeks, and you fold in Mage. They're actually, it's kind of interesting, the tally sheet, and I'm sure I'll bring it up with Jessica, too. Very notable to see, you know, some of the names that were, you know, successful over, you know, so far. During the Triple Crown weekends, and looking down, I see a Golden Sense colt that the Amistoys, and of course, this obviously more than a little disappointing that Practical Move couldn't make Derby, but the Amistoys paying $250 for a Golden Sense colt, hip 193. But back at the top of the chart, Speedway also brought home a colt a little bit before the Mendelssohn filly. Not This Time, that PickView offered, $500,000. And there was also the Uncle Mo filly. The second biggest price for a filly was the Uncle Mo that Solis and Lit signed for, also a PickView consigned product. The Tappet that Julie Davies prepared, $600,000 to Steve Young, and we'll get all the ins and outs from Jess about some of the agents and who signed for what. There was also, right at the end of the session, right near the end of the session, the McLean's Music Colt, Out of Martini. you know I'm gonna ask, no relation. This one, a Legion bloodstock, who we really think highly of, the young hard chargers, $450,000 for that McLean's Music colt. So quite a few interesting names on the list, and felt like a nice wide array, the buying bench, as it were. And so we'll get the feel for day two and get some more backstories from TDN's Jessica Martini in just a few minutes. There's also, speaking of TDN, I started to go in that direction, but I thought I'd go with the story that, you know, is in the process of happening, meaning the sale. But if you haven't seen the news from last night when TDN puts out the issue, A new attempt at a racing league is in the offing. The NTL, the National Thoroughbred League. Then we need Cosell. Where's Frank? where's Miramati? Who does the best Howard? It's got to be Frank, right? The National Thoroughbred League. There! At Tampa Bay. The championship. This is a concept. the baby's got me giddy, because compared to yesterday where you had to be worried I was going to jump off the house. This is a concept that has been broached and kicked around. Tom Lute can't join us today. There's all kinds of activity going on, and I think, I think the story kind of took them a little bit. I think they didn't necessarily expect this story to be released today. But Tom Lute will join us tomorrow, and Tom is he's got a bit of a Pete Rozelle thing going, right, Lute? Lute is going to be the commissioner, and he's in charge of bloodstock acquisition. They're going to put together 36 a league with the six teams, and the teams this first season that'll start Labor Day weekend at Kentucky Downs. Unfortunately, I won't be there till I think the day after. I think what Wednesday of the first week of September, but six teams, and it'll basically be a 4-month season, give or take. I don't necessarily need to give you all the details. It'll start in September, end on New Year's Eve at Tampa, and the first six teams that are going to be a part of this, Philadelphia, who we already know we'll be rooting for, right? Philadelphia, Nashville, Seattle, Jersey, L.A., and New York. So an interesting group of teams, and we'll flesh out all the specifics about trainers and how it's going to work. But they're going to acquire 36 horses essentially over the next few months. Lute is going to be working with bloodstock agents. And, Frank Stronach, to Frank's everlasting credit, Frank had this idea too, and felt that there was real potential to, have this kind of a competition where, people could root for teams and get associated to teams. There's a very heady list of people involved, starting with the guys that conceived it. Randall Lane, the chief content officer of Forbes, and Bob Daughtry, who's an investor. And then people from the industry that have chipped in, including Steve Asmussen and Chad Brown, Mike Smith and Chantal Sutherland, are going to be part of this. NBA and NFL, and I imagine, I didn't see a NHL name, but I imagine they're a natural because they love this. But and friends of Casey's, Rick Ross is involved, and Nelly, and Kayvon Thibodeau, Danny Green. Also, Baron Davis. You got a pretty heady list, and I know some people will immediately scoff at the whole notion, but what's not to cheer about here? Things start at Kentucky Downs, September 2nd. Then they'll go to Emerald. Then the Meadowlands, which will be the fall Monmouth at Meadowlands season. And then Los Al in the end of November and beginning of December. And then the final races of the season at Tampa. They've already got interest, I guess, from other regions. and other potential, you know, municipalities that might want to come on. It's very cool. We'll get all the details from Loot and more. All right. So if you haven't seen that yet, I'm sure it is. It is what, Tuesday. So horse racing Twitter. Horse racing Twitter has something to keep themselves occupied, as if there wasn't enough. Right? Yeah. So that's a little interesting tidbit. Andy Serling later this morning, hour three. John White, shifted John from yesterday to today to do some recapping with him, and we should probably get the Santa Anita portion of the weekend. There's good action coming up. You know, it's coming up fast. Memorial Day on Monday, and three grade ones, the Gamely, the Shoemaker, and the Hollywood Gold Cup, coming up Monday at Santa Anita. Who am I missing? John White and, Delaware opens tomorrow. Assiniboia opened yesterday. And Chris Sobosinski will join us from Delaware Park, the little track that could. The great, what's the saying? The great race place where the big names race, is something along those lines. It's right. Yeah. We like the little track that could. If you've never been to Delaware, first of all, it's the easiest stop. There may not be a racetrack closer off of 95 than Delaware Park. It's literally, you know, it's literally on the exit ramp almost. And it is just a delightful place. You know, make this the summer that you go to Colonial and Delaware and Monmouth. Put together a mid-Atlantic tour. All right? That's my suggestion. So we'll talk to Chris as their season gets underway tomorrow. An eight-race card. Got some nice field, sizes, and we'll see who's signed on. I'm taking a look, actually, really kind of for the first time, to see what we can expect. So we'll talk to Chris, and I think there's a chance. We're talking to Connor Murphy today, who won the Louisville with Foreign Relations with Decky Cannon aboard on Saturday. One of the the non hi-ho races of the weekend. Yeah, so part of what's going on, and there'll be others that swing by. Let me, before I reach for Jessica in the next 2 minutes, yesterday, nice enough to be asked to visit with Bob Valvano. And his show, and you know, those of you in Kentucky, you certainly know the Bob Valvano show. And Jenny Reese actually reached out to me, and I guess they were, you know, they wanted to get some reaction. It's that the ESPN 680 in the Ville, and I didn't get a chance before I came on to listen, but I understand Tim Sullivan was on, who takes every opportunity he can to misinform about the industry and the sport. And I didn't really get a chance to. I heard later on some of the things that were suggested, and I'm sorry I didn't I couldn't directly rebut some of the things that apparently, you know, he said, and Valvano was, you know, he seemed, I think I know that he's a that he's pro racing, but he was trying to, you know, offer I guess, quote unquote, both sides. I don't know. But, you know, when somebody claims that, their testing is, they test so much more in Europe. Oh, the testing, that's a complete, utter falsehood. They don't test nearly as much. They don't test nearly as many horses. They don't test for nearly as many possible foreign items in a horse as we do here. You're talking about multiples beyond. it's so outlandish to make a claim that they're testing in Europe more stringently than we do here. Complete lie. It's a complete gaslight. They don't test top finish, all the top finishers. They don't test random horses that may have finished up the track. It's laughable. And apparently that's one of the claims that was made in this ongoing smokescreen that the rest of the world, meloxicam wouldn't have been called a positive at all around the fair forte. And in fact, under HISA, there was more details, I guess, offered, if you didn't see that piece, that Dan Ross, the Q&A he did with Lisa Lazarus, and Lisa told you exactly that last week with me, that, you know, she wasn't on top of every aspect and all the measurements, but that from what she could tell, Forte wouldn't have even been a positive, but yet the rest of the world, it's unbelievable. Yeah, you know, the rest of the world doesn't have a 12-month calendar of racing. I saw somebody online, looking for answers that were provided 30 years ago about Lasix. Why do we need it? Why did it come about? Why does the rest of the world, for the most part, doesn't store horses and stable horses at the racetrack in barns the way we do? The rest of the world doesn't necessarily store hay and straw above their heads the way we do, thereby creating, congestion issues in horses. The rest of the world, or most of what we think of, European or UK, they have completely different scenario. The horses, we've got winter racing here, where so barns have to be kept closed, and so the circulation becomes an issue. There's just so many differences, and I wish I wasn't really made aware until afterward that there were certain claims made about the game before I was on with Valvano. Drum beating was in part fueled by the visit Nick Luck, we enjoyed with Nick Luck yesterday. And thanks again to Nick and to Steve Crist for their perspectives, and Mig too. Crist I wanted on from the journalist publisher perspective about how these stories are being handled, particularly by mainstream media. But my point, as I thought Nick Luck yesterday stressed really well, and you know, talking points that need to be distributed and widely repeated, involving the jobs and the specifics that are involved in the economic engine which the game is. And certainly in Kentucky, I don't think it's some revelation. There's 24,000 direct jobs in Kentucky, 24,000, and not many less in New York either, as it happens. There's a total of 80,000 indirect jobs indirectly supported by racing in Kentucky, and an economic contribution, this is just Kentucky, of over $800 million, close to $900 million. Yeah. So somebody said, I think it was Bob said, well, what if the politicians, what if the politicians, the politicians are going to be, are going to side on the side of 24,000 jobs, if we're talking Kentucky. And a million, I think it's 1.7 million direct jobs nationwide, tied to the horse industry. That's the horse of any kind, equine. And if somebody says, well, it's not just just racing. What about just racing? Well, do you think that the people that are saying that they want racing to end, you think they're going to stop with racing? Thoroughbred racing or harness racing or quarter horse racing or barrel racing or rodeo or eventing or polo? Come on. This whole suggestion, I love the breathless reporting. The industry teetering? Get the fuck out of here. Teetering. I mean, it's so preposterous and should be met with an absolute in-your-face response. I'm astounded that people cowering about it. All right. let's get to Jessica Martini, and that'll cheer us, or that'll get us talking in a excited manner, in a differently excited manner, differently. Jessica Martini.
I'm coming in the middle. I have no idea what I'm getting everyone excited about.
Well, they're just excited to hear your voice. That's all.
I get that a lot.
Well, congratulations on the McLean's Music Cult.
Oh, I guess. Absolutely. That was totally mine, right? Everything that's named Martini is mine.
Right? Exactly. I mean, the bar in It's a Wonderful Life is yours. Martini's. Everything. We did learn all this, by the way. We learned the whole family history of the Martinis at OBS.
Nobody wants to hear that again.
I don't know. I get. I'm not sure about that. why? I guess it's because it takes a few minutes for people to settle in to the ring and find their seats, or why is it that these sales invariably start slow?
It's definitely a pattern. I agree with you. And yesterday it was definitely something. I think that Boyd was probably a little nervous in the beginning because it seemed like none of the horses were getting sold. It seemed like the buyback rate was just, every horse not sold. But yeah, I don't know. I guess it is just everybody's trying to feel out the market and see what's going on. And another thing that might have affected this sale yesterday was the first day of the Breeze show. It seemed like the track was sticky and the times were slow and nobody quite knew what to make of those times. And I think maybe that was reflected in the early sales yesterday as well.
then things started, you know, then things started to click. And I suppose, I mean, just looking at the sheet, I guess it was the looking at Lucky Colt that West Point bought for $320. That, you know, that was the first sale above above 250 to that point in the afternoon. And then came the Omaha Beach Colt that Mark Glatt bought for $425. Then there was a kind of a steady, you know, kind of a steady trickle. 350, Kerry Radcliffe bought the one from Kieran Dunn, the Liam's Map Colt, hit 127. But it was really the last, what, the last hour and a half that...
that I didn't sit down the whole time.
Exactly. You were running a... Who was that? Who did you sign for? Wait, I got to go back over here.
And it was funny because the Speedway crew, they were bidding. I think they were out in the parking lot and they were bidding on the phone. So I had to run out and track them down. But they can't hide from me, Steve. You know that.
Well, were they bidding from Michaels from the table with a plate of crab cakes?
That would have been more exciting for me. But no, I think they were just out in the parking lot and they were on the phone with some of the phasing guys. I'm not sure what that was about, if they thought they were maybe hiding from so people wouldn't see that they were bidding on horses. I'm not sure why that was done, but I found them eventually.
Well, the day's top sale, a Mendelsohn filly, Paul Sharp offered $800,000 to Peter Fleur and company.
Yeah, that's their Speedway is building up their broodmare band. Peter Fleur told me he kind of accidentally got into breeding. He and his partner, they had a few fillies. They couldn't decide what to do, if they should sell them or breed them, sell them or breed them. They went back and forth and finally ran out of time and just bred them. And that's how they started in the breeding game. And now they're looking for well-bred fillies to join their broodmare band. And this is one that they had their eyes on.
And interesting that, you know, there's residual value and then there's, you know, trying to find, you know, I don't want to call it a showpiece, but, you know, it's interesting that, you know, here's a horse that, you know, racing in the afternoon is still a couple of months away, and they're already thinking, you know, what they've got when her career is over.
Yeah, you have to think long term here. It's chess. You're not going
chess, not checkers. There we go.
Exactly. And also, Paul Sharp obviously sold Faiza here last year, and this was a really nice pinhook for him. And Liz Crow, the Mendelsohn filly, they bought for I think 150 or something, and so had a nice return on their investment yesterday.
We'll talk about some of the nice scores on that front. Let's hit a few more of the the buying bench stories and the stallion stories. It felt to me, Jess, just, you know, kind of watching as things were going along, and then, you know, later on in the evening when, you know, when I kind of thumbed through the entire results, that there was a real nice variety. Sometimes on one day, and this may change after we're done today, but some days there's concentrations of purchase or concentration of success for consigners or, you know, certain stallions that stood out. And of course, a lot of this is random based on, you know, the dams and the alphabetical portion of it and all that stuff. But it really felt like this was a varied day of buyers and stallions that did well.
Yeah, definitely agree with that. I think it was spread over, as you said, a lot of consigners. I think the top 10 horses were from 8 different consignments. So, yeah, definitely it was all over the place yesterday, which is kind of nice to see different people getting in and having success.
Hey, talk a little bit about who caught your eye and some of the storylines that developed in your coverage. I mean, certainly Maverick and Sienna with two of the top 6 purchases. West Point was active. I made the point opening the show talking about the sale that it's not unusual at this sale to see connections that have had good winters translate into fresh purchases. And I saw the Amstoys bought the Golden Sense for $225,000. People campaigning Practical Move with Tim Yakteen. Bregman Family Racing, $260,000 for that City of Light filly. And they've had some recent success in the last couple of weeks. I forget who the stake winner was. But anyway, that to me is in evidence.
Yeah, the Bregman family, they have that the No Nay Never, who worked so fast at OBS April and came back to win the Gulfstream stake. They RNA'd him at OBS. They won a stake at Gulfstream. It was a win-in, and you're in for the Royal Ascot race. So they're going to Royal Ascot with that No Nay Never, who was at OBS.
That's what it was. That's right, with George Weaver. We talked about it with George last week when we were in Nashville.
And, of course, Commonwealth got the Derby winner out of last year's Mid-Atlantic sale. And now they got an awesome Slough colt yesterday with Windstar Farm in Siena as well.
The awesome Slough story, and I'll bring it up with Sid Fernando tomorrow. The awesome Slough story is notable, given the modest origins and maybe the latest Florida stallion that is checking in with Trivago to see if there's a bargain flight somewhere to Kentucky soon.
Yeah, I talked to Tom McCaughlin. Tom bought the awesome Slough for Champion Equine last year at OBS for $150,000, and then he worked the bullet 10 furlong last week in 10 flat. And I asked Tom, did he think $150,000 was a lot to pay for an awesome Slough last year? And he mentioned that last year it was really hard for these guys to buy yearlings. It was a very competitive market that they were buying in, and he thought he got a good horse. And obviously that was borne out yesterday with the $700,000 price tag there.
Well, and this gets into the story lines we hear, very regularly. Certainly, you think about Seth Klarman buying individuals, and that it doesn't have to be a flashy stallion. A lot of cases, Klarman specifically, he's turned them into flashy stallions. He and Chad Brown working together on some of the offbeat pedigrees and stallion that they've reached for at sales.
Yeah, I guess that's another angle that works at particularly well at two-year-old sales, because you get to see them on the track. You're that much closer, so you can see the individual and what he might be capable of.
Well, and of course, one thing we always hear from OBS to this, is the dirt track versus the synthetic track. And, there's outfits that they want to, is what it is. There's some that I guess just aren't as comfortable making a determination about a horse breezing on the synthetic, and they feel more comfortable buying from this assortment.
Yeah, people always talk about they can separate them out better on dirt than they can on the synthetic, that you can't make a fast horse go fast on the dirt, but you can make him go fast on the synthetic. You talk about somebody like Tom McCaughlin. He has 33 horses here. He says, yes, he targeted this sale so he could work them on the dirt.
Well, and that's that's also part of the game and the decision making, how they're brought along and where they're going to end up, where they obviously are going to fetch where they could fetch the most money. The Mendelsohn Filly, for a second again, out of Lady Hansen, and of course that name representing Dr. Hansen, the man who brought you Hansen, and and it remains quite a character. Kendall bred this filly.
Yeah, and I think this is maybe her first foal. I can't remember. They all kind of blend together after a while. Nope, she has another foal. This is her second foal. Her first foal is a practical joke who is actually in Japan.
Well, we looking up and down here, looking for some other fun stories. That McLean's Music out of Martini, that Legion Bloodstock, I call them the Young Chargers, the Young Heart Chargers.
They all walk around together, too. They should get, they think they do have matching T-shirts. They definitely need to. If they don't have them, they need to get them.
Well, they got the matching hats. They got those
yeah,
LB.
Yeah,
those
not as dramatic.
Those LB. Well, they still, you still wouldn't want to run into that bunch in a dark alley.
No.
Especially Kristen. He's kind of well-balanced and low to the ground.
I saw him around for years, and I never spoken to him, and then I finally spoke to him. I always, I don't know, there was something something, he looked a little intimidating. And I finally spoke to him, and he was super nice. And I was like, oh, really, that's not what I was expecting.
That's very funny. He's as sweet as could be. And, of course,
his dad,
Joe, of course, we haven't talked to Joe that much, but his terrific line of supplements and medications for the racehorse that are prominently advertised on the show. This is a Maryland bred Barak Farm produced this 450, and this has been a horse that's been through the ring three times now.
Yeah, and I believe that one of the partners that Hartley Dorenzo had on that horse was a new guy in the business, Rich Mendez, who he's a big music guy in Miami. I am not hip enough to know him, but apparently he has some very well-known artists that he represents. He's has a music line or label. That's what we call it, label. So he's somebody he actually bought the Into Mischief for I think $1.3 million at OBS April. So
yes.
he's excited about getting into the business.
I read, and I don't know, did you or Christina have a little note about him?
I spoke to him at OBS.
Yeah.
He seems very excited. So it's nice to see new people get involved like that.
Oh, without a doubt. What else caught your eye? The one thing that's interesting too is, you know, from April even to May, it's only been, another month essentially since the second OBS sale. Things will go back to OBS for June, and there is, of course, the new sale that Fasig has added to the calendar. So we still do have two more two-year-old sales. But, these horses, especially looking at first croppers, they continue to mature and age. Have you noticed anything, Jess, as you see horses presented and brought out of stalls to, be considered? Have you noticed any, further maturity from any of those first crop stallions?
Well, it's interesting. I feel like I have seen 1,000 Maximus Mischiefs. I don't know how many of them are out there, but they just every time I turn around, I think there's another one. And I think he's been coming on a little bit. I know Kerry Frommer had a nice sale with one yesterday. So maybe he's one to keep an eye on. Vino Rosso also had a nice sale yesterday. And Omaha Beach, we keep talking about him. He had a nice sale yesterday. So I think I haven't seen any major jump ups, but maybe some things to keep an eye on. I would mention the great day that Joe Pickerel had at Pickview Farm. He pinhooked a Not This Time colt that sold for $500,000 to Speedway. And I think he bought it for something like $250. And that was, he also had an Uncle Mo filly that he was selling for the breeder that sold for $625. So it was a really nice day for him.
Nice. I'm actually looking ahead now to the, we'll do today's highlights in a second. How about some other nice pinhook successes?
Well, the Vino Rosso that I mentioned before, that was out of a mare that Becky Thomas had actually bought in utero. So I think for very little, I'm going to say 19,000, but I could be totally wrong on that. But and the Vino Rosso that came out of her, that mare was sold for $350. So, a nice investment for her. She still has the mare, obviously.
Nice. I'm also, I see a lot, number of very solid, doubling and triplings, range. That Twirling Candy filly that went for $485, hit $290 late in the session. The Nick DeMerrick offered $485 and was $160,000 Keeneland purchase by Sand Hill bloodstock. That's a nice pop. Tripling
kind of
money.
Another Twirling Candy, kind of on a smaller scale. I saw Nick Hines bought a filly for $40,000 and sold it for $150. So it seemed like there was a bunch of different levels of pinhooking success as well.
Nice. So that'll fund the yearling purchases in July and August and September that are now not far off, actually.
It comes around quick.
Exactly. This is it's the hamster wheel, as we like to refer to it. Jess, how about today? I'm looking at the TDN Pinhook Guide, which is always fun. It shows you the horses that are going to go through the ring. Got 300 more hips, give or take, minus the outs. And looking down this list, there were a few very pricey yearling purchases. The kind of the high wire act that you refer to frequently. How about the Curlin today early? The colt that was a $300,000 Keeneland yearling, Red Wings bought, and Kieran Dunn is offering $300,000. There's Into Mischief Philly out of Mystic City. Golden Rock is handling Three Beauties Thoroughbred. This was Elusive Thoroughbreds purchased. That one I saw, and I think I saw an Arrogate that I wanted to bring up with you.
I know
you.
Hartley DeRenzo had an Arrogate filly that worked the bullet last week, and I think that's probably going to be the star of today. Right after the filly worked, I went back to the barn to talk to Randy Hartley, and Donato Lani and Michael Lund Peterson were already looking at the filly, and I saw them. They came back again on Sunday with Bob Baffert, so I think we can pinpoint that one as maybe a star for today.
Is that's the one out of Twixie, right?
Yes.
That sells
mm-hmm.
late.
Mm-hmm.
There
yes.
it is. Well, $255,000 Keeneland yearling, Arrogate filly out of Twixie. And that one, as you mentioned, Hartley DeRenzo, Uncle Mo filly late in the day today, that Carrie Frommer happens to be a New York bred from the Saratoga sale for $280 as well, hip 537.
Right, and I think Hartley DeRenzo also has another, a Justify colt who had a nice work last week as well. I'm not sure what he was a $175,000 October yearling at Fasig.
Yeah, this is
the... They had actually, I remember this now, it's coming back to me. They had bought that horse as a weanling, Hartley DeRenzo, which they do sometimes to sell as yearlings as well, and the horse didn't sell at September, and they brought him back in October to dissolve a partnership that some partners wanted to get out. So they have a new bunch of partners. That's why that horse sold for at the October sale last year.
Excellent. Well, 11 o'clock today, the action gets started. Are you working this alone?
I am alone, yes.
Well, doing the work of what usually takes two or three people.
I have my comfortable shoes on.
Yeah, comfortable. That's going to make me laugh. The action going to start in about an hour and 20 minutes. Day two of the Timonium sale, the Mid-Atlantic 2-year-old in training sale, certainly. You know, these horses will, in a lot of cases, they'll head straight to racetracks, and you'll start to see them. Certainly keep an eye out at the summer racing venues at Saratoga, Del Mar, Ellis, and the like. Jess will be watching for your TDN alerts for some
Great,
of those,
thanks, Steve.
Those big six-figure sellers. Thank you. There's Jess, and does a terrific job. And she's doing it all by herself, as it happens. Going to go to Delaware. And some of these horses will show up, I'm sure, at Delaware Park. It's funny. Who was it? It was Mike Trombetta. It was Trombetta, years ago, told me about. This was when this sale was, it kind of spreading its wings, that you could get a bargain. It's tough to get any bargains these days at any sale. But Mike used to poach them out of this. So we'll be watching today. let's go to Delaware. Let's get Chris in here. And I got to spend a little time with him last summer. And of course, this is a little bittersweet because I normally might be under different set of circumstances would be checking in with JJ. And of course, that day we spent with JJ and with Tony and with Chris at Delaware Park, that was the most fortuitous phone call I've made to say to JJ that we're going to be coming up from Chincoteague, and how about if I stopped by and did the show from Delaware, and unbeknownst to us at the time that JJ was as sick as he was, and then gone months later. So, I'm just saying I'm so glad that opportunity came about, that I got to do that visit with JJ last summer.
Yes, I think about that day very often now, especially after some of the things that you just said. And you never know the moments that you have in life that you really got to appreciate. And, I think we appreciated that moment, and I think we understood the context of that moment a little bit later on about how important it was. But I'm going to remember that day for probably the rest of my life. That was a really special day, and it really captured some of the moments that were so special about Delaware Park and what JJ brought to Delaware Park. And having you here as a host that day made it a real, really fun day.
Well, and for me, because JJ and Sam and John Parada and Gus Alonzo made it possible for me to get involved with the show, and I learned so much from Joe Gracie. You want to talk about a racetracker's racetracker,
yeah.
And horseman, and just terrific. So this summer, and certainly starting tomorrow, it'll again be different. I mean, obviously between Rich Glaser and JJ, I mean, you've had a tough, actually, handful of years. Who's going to be handling the personality, punditry and hosting on the feed?
Before we get to that, going back to JJ, June 10th, we're trying to put together a little race for him to celebrate the contributions that he made here at Delaware Park. It's not going to be anything extravagant or anything like that,
sure.
But we're going to invite the family out, and we're going to do a little presentation, have a little get-together in the Winter Circle, and have a moment of silence. So that's the plan. I'm hoping it all comes together. But it was important for us to, before we move forward, to also look back and say thank you to all the great things that JJ did here at Delaware Park.
That's really nice. June 10th?
June 10th.
All right.
Still not sure of the race. We're going to wait until we draw before we pick the race that honor JJ. It'll probably be like a $10,000 claimer going short.
That'd be perfect.
With a bunch of hard knocks.
That would be great. He would love that. He would absolutely love it.
So that's something to look forward to. The person we're bringing on board is another great, great character. I think he's got a tradition here in the Mid-Atlantic region. He worked in Maryland for many years. Stan Salter.
Ah.
We're very excited to have him on board because of his knowledge,
sure,
and enthusiasm. Obviously, he's going to be different than JJ and different than Rich. They're all a little bit different. But we're excited about what he's going to be able to bring to the product and to make racing here at Delaware Park even more exciting than it has in the past. And we think Stan's going to be a really, really good addition to everything that we offer here at Delaware Park.
Oh, no doubt. And I suppose that you better warn the squirrels. If I don't know if that video is still available, but the outdoor set at Laurel and Stan was greeted one day out there by
yes,
by a very aggressive squirrel.
It's funny that you bring that up because I think Delaware Park's got friendlier squirrels or more aggressive squirrels than they do in Maryland. But we're going to find out, I guess, sometime throughout the course of this meet.
Well, do you have the Philly red squirrels?
I'm not sure if they're Philly red, but I tell you this, they are the world's friendliest squirrels I've ever seen. I used to grow up in the country, and I never had a squirrel approach me and actually demand peanuts.
That's
but
great.
It happened to me at Delaware Park quite a few times.
I love that. It's well, and if you need any help with that, the squirrel whisperer is Leah Giamatti. She literally, I don't know, she's like a Crocodile Dundee for squirrels.
That's great. We're going to have a good time this year with that, I'm sure. I mean, and the only reason why I say that is because I have the relationship I have with squirrels here at Delaware Park. One of the things I fear the most in the world is having to deal with an irate gambler who lost a really close race and lost his wager. But the one thing that's even scarier than that is a squirrel that's demanding peanuts from me.
For those that have never been, and I suggested to everybody a mid-Atlantic sequence between Delaware Colonial and Monmouth, for those that have never been, and the paddock is the nicest paddock, as great as we've got at Saratoga. The paddock at Delaware is, it's like something you would think you're in Baden-Baden. It is unbelievable how a paddock was carved out of that, you know, that forest of trees. It's always cool and you know, shady and just, it's majestic, and the racing office and jocks quarters at one end and then the building on the other. It's the best paddock in all of racing, and whenever anybody goes to Delaware for the first time, they're wide-eyed at what they encounter. There's the park for the kids. There's so much to like about a day at Delaware Park.
Yes, we're very proud of the paddock, the atmosphere here at Delaware Park. We're proud of the Mid-Atlantic region and the racing that we give to the entire country, and I think Delaware Park is a great symbol of that. Of that pride that we have in your Mid-Atlantic. And that paddock is the work of Willie DuPont, and it's amazing how it never gets old. Race started in 1937, and the paddock just gets better and better through the years. And just like Delaware Park racing too. So we're very proud of that.
Let's talk about what we've got coming, and let's start with the basics. Chris Sobosinski's with us, and we're talking about the Del Park season kicking off tomorrow. What's the calendar look like, the days of the week we're going to race?
So we are going to race primarily, it's going to be Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. There's going to be select Fridays we don't run, so I suggest checking on the website instead of me rattling off a lot of dates. But most of the days we're not going to be running Fridays. It's probably going to be August. First post time is 12:30 for most race days, unless we may change something up for Owner's Day or Delcap Day. But that will be announced. And our meet concludes on October 28th. The big days to look forward to are actually this Saturday. We have a prep for the Delaware Handicap, the Obeah Stakes, which is one of my favorite races that we run for the entire season. And then on July 1st, we have Delaware Oaks Day. July 8th, we have Delaware Handicap Day. And then the week after that, July 15th, we're going to have two nice stakes races. They're not graded, but they're the Christiana and the Kent. And both of those are going to be on the grass for three-year-old boys and three-year-old girls. September 9th, we have Owner's Day, which I think is the 31st Owner's Day, which is amazing. And that day is always fun with large fields and exciting racing. So those are the big days. Two other days to keep in mind. Actually, they're the same days we have some of the big stakes races. We're going to have two handicapping contests this year.
Excellent.
One on July 15th and one on September 9th. We're really looking forward to that because for people who are not too familiar, Bill Moore, who worked here back in the 2000s, was actually kind of one of the pioneers for the live money contest as we appreciate them today. And we're really looking forward to trying to get back to those roots that we had and capture some of that enthusiasm and energy from bringing horse players from across the region to come here on property to actually get in the handicapping contest. So that's going to be fun too. So we have quite a few things in store that we're really looking forward to.
Really nice. I just pulled up the calendar. In fact, I'm going to put it out on Twitter for everybody, and it's got the highlighted dates, so you can see what Fridays are dark. And as Chris mentioned, this week actually no Friday racing, but then the four Fridays in August, and also looks like October 27th near the end of the meet. But all the important dates are there for you. Starting tomorrow through October 28th, so a little less than six calendar months of racing. Let's talk about who's on the backstretch, what we can expect, some of the barns, talk betting options, betting menu, and the riding colony.
Well, if you don't mind, I'll start with the betting options first, because I'm a little bit excited about that, too. We added a tiny little new wrinkle to our betting options. We're going to have two pick fives this year. We're going to have an early pick five and a late pick five, and the takeout for those pick fives are 15%. And those are just a nice little thing. You know, with a pick five, I mean, every once in a while you get a carryover and it's $20,000, $30,000, and it adds a little bit more excitement and sugar to the day. So it's just nice to have those. So the pick fives are going to be starting race one and also in race five. The pick fours, we're going to have two pick fours. One's going to be in race, start in race two, and the other one's going to start in race five. And then all the exotics, the pick threes, the daily doubles, they'll be rolling all day, and we're going to have the standard exacta, trifecta, superfecta for every race. So that's basically going to be the wagering menu. It's mostly all the same except for that additional pick five, which hopefully will add a little bit more excitement to the day. In terms of the personalities that we are expecting to be participating in our racing, there's not going to be a whole lot of change from previous years. It's going to be that nice, interesting Mid-Atlantic mix of people. Obviously, Jamie Nessel will be back, and he's going for his 10th straight title. Last year, he set a record for most consecutive titles that was held by Hall of Famer Buddy Delp, and it was also equaled by Scott Lake of seven consecutive wins. And if Jamie Ness notches another trainer title this year, which I gotta say he's probably the prohibitive favorite to do, he'll equal the record for most, which Grover Buddy Delp has held, which is 11. So that's pretty cool. We got Jamie Ness going shooting for that. And all of the other trainers that have participated in racing here, most of them are all going to be back. The one thing that I really look forward to here when I do the morning lot odds and I handicap the races at Delaware Park is that interesting mix that you get of like horses from Fair Hill and shipping down from New York and then shipping from West Virginia. Where you have some of those horses, they come from all over Delaware since we're centrally located. And sometimes you get some really, really fun races to do because of that. So I'm looking forward to that. One new trainer, actually, she's a new old trainer, is Diane Morrissey, who I want to pay attention to. I think she has about 40 horses here. She was here like 10 years ago. And she was just starting out, and she's been in Florida, I believe, and now she's going to be really cutting at Delaware for the summer. So I really want to pay attention to her, too, as well. The jockey colony, it's going to be basically the same group again. I mean, the Jamie Rodriguez's, the Carol Cedeños, they're all going to be back. I suspect Jamie will probably be riding a lot of Jamie Ness's better horses, and Carol Cedeño will be picking up a lot of good mounts for some of the other trainers. So that jockey title is going to be a interesting battle. Carol Cedeño, Jamie Rodriguez has been the rider for the last 2 years, and Carol Cedeño had been the leading rider here for the previous six. So just seeing them have their day in and day out battles is always an interesting storyline too with all the days we have here at Live Race of Live Racing.
Carol Cedeno is, I say it every year whenever Delaware comes around to be discussed. Carol Cedeno is a fabulous story that doesn't get enough attention.
Oh my gosh, you're right to you about that.
She's had a fabulous career. She has taken time off, what, twice? How many children?
Two.
Yeah, she's taken time away twice to have children, come back and gotten right back into the swing. You mentioned the riding titles. She's terrific, and
she's a fierce competitor. As fierce as they come.
Yep. And for whatever reason, especially when the topic of female riders comes up, there's certain names that they get lauded appropriately, and I mean she's certainly the dean of current female riders. I if people don't watch her ride on a regular basis, tune in any day to whether she goes up to Philly for some days or the regular riding. Even this past weekend at Pimlico, she's got 1,211 wins in her career, 8 out of 8,700 mounts.
Yes, and she's a hard worker. She lives in Delaware. She takes a lot of pride in doing well here at Delaware. And she's a single mom. I don't know how she does it, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I see her on the backstretch some mornings, and I just look at her and I smile. I just look at her and I say, I'm sitting here complaining I can't keep my life straight. I don't know how you do it. And she inspires me every day because of that.
She's a great story to me. I don't know her at all, but hopefully this summer, if we get a chance to swing through, we'll get her on. I'm just looking at last year's meet. Actually, I'm just pulling up. I'm just curious in terms of totals. I mean, Jamie Rodriguez, 134 wins Mikel Sanchez, Angel Suarez, Carol, Jeremy Rose, who, of course...
That's right, Jeremy Rose. He'll be back.
...has forged himself back into, his career back on track. Daniel Cedeno as well, Raul Mena, John Araldo. Yeah.
It's a steady group. They're all pretty
good.
They're all really good riders. They all give you their best.
Yeah, and then, of course, you get some of the Maryland guys come down for days when there isn't overlap, guys like the X-Man, Xavier Perez. I'm just looking, actually, at Saturday's Obeya, and nice field of six preparing for the Del Cap morning matcha for Butchie by Central Banker. Tap the Faith, Carol picking up a mount for Christophe Clement on Tap the Faith. The Tap at Philly that was an allowance winner at the end of the year and makes her four-year-old debut in here. Butchie's also got Pistol Liz Ablazon. Doesn't have a jock. Sheldon Russell comes to town for Brittany.
Brittany Russell, I forgot about her. And yes.
Yep.
I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Brittany Russell's got horses here at Stable at Delaware, and she's going to be an interesting. I mean, she's had two horses stable here in the past, but
she's a handful. Hybrid Eclipse for Stuart Grant for Elkstone. Award Wanted, Jerry Robb coming out of that Heavenly Cause, which also produced Hybrid Eclipse. That was the Beth's Dream win. And then out of the Double Dog Dare, Riley Mott has a Claiborne homebred, the Street Sense Philly, that shows up here, and Jamie Rodriguez gets that call for Riley. There's your field.
It's a neat little race.
Yeah.
That's what I mean about some of the races that we have here at Delaware. You never know where they're going to come from. Usually we get a nice, interesting mix with a lot of different storylines with some of these races.
No, it's a good.
And I'm really excited about Morning Match. She ran here in the Delaware Oaks last year. She ran third. She didn't get the best of trips and had a battle through some adversity in that race. But she is a hard knock in Philly. I spoke to Butch Reed yesterday, and he was just telling me about how she's mentally and physically matured even from last year, and the break has done her so well. And I'm just can't wait to see what we're going to get with her this Saturday and moving forward. I'm hoping that, you know, it all comes together and she has a really nice season this year. That's not, and started with the 7 furlong race in her seasonal debut in her last race at Parks, which, you know, they were hoping that she was going to run well. But the fact that she won that race was even more a bigger bonus. And then coming into the OB. So I'm really excited about Morning Match and the competition, too. I mean, it's a six-horse field, but everybody in that race has, you know, is going to be right there. I mean, there's no throwouts.
Well, the big question, if we still can pull out a Rich Glazier, who is the horse that loves you tomorrow on opening day?
The horse that loves you. I had my notes all prepared, and I got a horse that loves you, and I... Hold on. Let me look through my program real quick.
Tomorrow's card, the feature is a starter allowance, $16,000 starter allowance, going a mile and a 16th on the grass, field of 10. I'm going to knock wood that the weather is good. A lot of turf... A lot of turf to start the season. You got 4 turf races of the 8, and I'm looking at it actually myself here for the first time. So
I think the horse that loves you is going to be the Jamie Rodriguez horse in the first race.
All right, we're going to start it off with a bang.
Because Rich was always fond of trying to predict the first race, the winner of the first race. He always had his little theories, and most of them were right, and they all changed based upon little things like the jockey that won 3 times before and stuff like that. But I figure it's the first race, so you got to go with the leading rider from the year before. So let's go with Jamie Rodriguez and the 6 horse in the first race.
Curtis for Bob Dunham and 3-1, 3-2, I should say. There's also the 9-5 for Steve Claseris. Speaking of
there's another old
Delaware, right? Exactly, Delaware standards. Curtis, has got to improve a little bit. To I can see why Happy Eyes is the favorite, or second choice. I don't know. All right, I'll trust you on this. Let me see if I can't find one very quickly on this card. Let me go to that featured 7th. And let's see what we got
now
here.
You get into the meat. This is
all right, actually. You know, Lacey Gaudette.
Actually, can I backtrack on the horse that loves you?
Yeah.
Because now I know who it is. I already had it picked out. In the 5th race, Lusty, a 4 horse, trained by Brittany Russell, ridden by Sheldon Russell.
All right. There it is, HTLY, the horse that loves you. I'm looking at, I'm going to give you a horse, I think, that this is a nice race, this Delaware 7th. Bodie's Maker, an appropriate favorite for Ness. Here's a horse that Lacey Gaudette shows up with from Laurel. That hasn't been on the turf in ages, but it is by Arch. This is a 7-year-old gelding. And I mean, I don't know what the weather forecast is down there tomorrow, so I don't know if she's thinking that maybe, you know, if weather is threatening. I do see there's a couple of MTOs on the card, but Fortune's Fool, last fall, this happens to be a seasonal debut. It's an interesting spot that Lacey Gaudette would come down for, you know, for this. So Fortune's Fool is very interesting. Any of his good races will fit here nicely, and by all rights, he should be okay on grass. Hasn't been on it since, you know, late in 2021. So 10-1. I mean, if he's actually running. He's interesting to me. So there you go.
I just pulled up the weather. And tomorrow. Oh.
Let's see. I'm sorry.
Well, the
tomorrow it's supposed to be 81, but mostly sunny with a 4% chance of rain.
There we go. So you've got yourself.
Thursday it's supposed to be 73 with a 5% chance of rain.
Well, then get the meat going nicely and with a trip to Delaware
Can I just
Park.
Tell everybody we're going to be fast and firm tomorrow.
I think so.
Without getting ahead of the track superintendent.
I think that's fair.
I might get in trouble for that.
No, you're all right, Chris. best of luck to everybody. What in terms of following the track? Obviously, there's the Del Park Twitter account, but.
Yeah, Del Park Racing. That's where you'll see the horse that loves you on a daily basis.
There we go.
Bring that back.
I love it.
A lot of people were tweeting at me last year saying,
"Where's
the horse? The
horse
that loves you."
Well,
and also too, I'm going to bring back another little feature too. It's the on the Twitter feed. It's going to be the beautiful place where the big names race, which
there
is the old slogan back in Delaware Park from the 70s. So every once in a while, I'll throw out a name or two to watch. The jockey or trainer calling, and I'm expecting to have a big day.
I love it. Well, yes. Well,
you can like us on Facebook. DelawarePark.com is the website, so you can follow us there. Follow us on the Simulcast feed and YouTube, too. I mean, YouTube's a valuable, nice resource of sometimes I get myself into trouble because I look too much video, but it's nice to be able to go look back at some of the videos of the horses to give you a different perspective of what you're reading in the past performances. So all that stuff.
Nice. Well, looking forward to trying to get a visit in. Typically, as we swing through Monmouth and Colonial this summer, and we'll try to make it a regular stop at Del Park. Chris Sobosinski, I appreciate it. We'll be watching for Stan Salter, and we'll wish Stan the best, and all the horsemen and jocks, the owners, Delaware Park, back on your wagering menu options tomorrow. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you, Steve. Looking forward to seeing you.
You got it. Chris Sobosinski, everybody, and Delaware Park. A little track that could. It's really pleasant. And yesterday, speaking of their Twitter feed, yesterday they had a Magnificent Monday, they called it, and they put up a picture from the Dover Stakes of 1972. July 9th, 1972, and the late Red Carroll for owner Howard Scott, a horse named Jim Duncan, with Johnny Rotz, Gentleman John, aboard as the Dover Stakes winner. And you've heard me talk often about Del Jr. Got to know when he was training for Pond Street Stables. And Del, speaking of people who taught me a lot about horses, Del in a lot of ways, the man who helped make AP Indy possible because he trained Weekend Surprise. Father's one of the greatest polo players in American polo history. I want to say a 9 rating. Is that right? Is that the way they... I think it only goes up to 10. Red Carroll, so good a polo player that Leroy Neiman did a painting of Del Carroll on his pony. And also, if I'm not mistaken, Del also responsible for the most important polo pony stallion. I think the horse that the pony that he rode was, the Darley Arabian of the of stallions. I mean, the most important. I'm pretty sure about that. Anyway, seeing Del Carroll's name always makes me think about Del and his sister, Larkspur. We should have named. We blew it. I should have convinced the kids to name the new baby Larkspur. Great name, right? So one of you out there, I just planted a seed. Somebody's going to name their daughter Larkspur. Back after this, John White joins us.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio. Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect...